and welcome to the Campaign Podcast. I'm Beau Jackson, media editor at Campaign, and I'm joined in the studio today by tech editor Lucy Shelley. Hello, Lucy.
Hi, Beau.
And deputy news editor Marianne Calnan, who is making her podcast debut today. Hi, Marianne.
Hello.
And of course, Campaign has been dominated by school reports headlines over the past week, which we'll be going into deeper in a special podcast later this week. But for now, we're here with some other stories that you may have missed if you've been caught up checking agency scores. Mm. We'll be covering the Sky Media shortlist, Brave Bison's financial results, DEI lessons from the RISE conference, and ads that caught our eye in the past week. On Friday, Shauna, our senior media reporter, broke the Sky shortlist. There are three holding companies on the pitch. Group M, which we knew would be in the mix, as Essence MediaCom is defending the account and it's one of its biggest clients. There's also Omnicom and Publicis.
I think it's interesting to see that pitches like this are being handled at a group level. I think we asked the industry, was it last week or the week before? I always forget now, about the Amazon shortlist, which was again all being pitched for at holding group level. And, you know, we have Publicis Power of One. Mm-hmm. I think Dentsu can refer to themselves as One Dentsu.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting trend that we have been questioning in our question of the week.
Question of the week, yes. It's a bit of a trend we're seeing. So we asked, will more agencies move to a holding company solution for their biggest clients in a former question of the week? And we had Essence MediaCom CEO Kate Rowlandson actually comment on that question, saying clients are increasingly looking to simplify and sharpen how they go to market.
Yeah, I thought there were a few quite interesting answers to that question that we got that week. Scott Moorhead, managing partner of the Aperto partnership, said the holding group model on paper has many potential benefits that are beyond conflict management, but there are very few examples of it truly being implemented. So I think this kind of, it sounds like a good solution for now, but whether it really works for everyone and in the long run, I think remains to be seen. And I think some of the other commentators said things move all the time. So it's kind of, it's unsurprising that we're seeing it shift together. Mm. And it will be unsurprising again to see things shift apart. But I think the question remains is, does this remove the individual agency's individuality?
Mm-hmm.
If things are being pitched in a wider holding company solution rather than kind of focusing on their individual characteristics and offerings, I guess.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he mentioned conflict in that comment that you've picked out, because I've been speaking with a few people across the industry about it, and what they're saying is that clients are kind of driving it, but it's also true that it's the way the agencies are restructuring and moving to the centre, so all the capabilities are at a group level now. If we think about like Group M's synergy, and that it also does really help when it comes to hugely competitive clients, because you're making a bespoke solution that's from across the agency. So then it's like a separate shop.
Yeah, I think also, you know, bringing the tech angle into this, I think, like you said, clients are becoming far more demanding. And when we have so many different tech, digital, data, you know, performance, CRM, all these different capabilities that clients are asking for and asking their agents to be experts of, if people can share expertise and the skills that they have, it, you know, it does make sense to spread out the net, but, you know, you're still kind of all working for the same goal, aren't you?
That's quite similar, actually, to what Jessica Tamzedge from Dentsu Creative said as well. So she was speaking about how using a holding group perspective is more about what the client needs than kind of what you need as an agency. So she talked about how you need creatives and media and kind of data elements of the business working together, and depending on what the client needs, you're able to do that if you are working at a holding group level. So it was really interesting what she said there. Mm. And kind of ties into what you were saying, Lucy.
So moving on as well, we've had Brave Bison back in the news recently. Lucy, what's the latest with them?
Yes, so we've all been busy reporting a lot of people's full year results over the last couple of weeks. But Brave Bison's highlighted something quite interesting, which they saw their full year results, saw them report a net revenue of 20.9 million, or let's call that 21 million, which is a 23% year-on-year increase, which is, you know, great figures, great stats. But the interesting thing when you look into this is because around about a year ago, in early 2023, they acquired Social Chain, which was started by Stephen Bartlett in 2014. And he didn't own it at the time of acquisition, but it was seen as one of the OG social media marketing agencies. So it was a big agent. It was a big acquisition that made a lot of headlines. And it was particularly interesting for quite a few reasons. I think the acquisition itself made a lot of headlines because it had a very low sale price at the time, mm-hmm. compared to what people thought it was worth. So it was sold for just less than 8 million, but people thought it was worth a lot more because it was part of the Social Chain wider group, mm-hmm. which Bartlett had claimed was worth hundreds of millions of dollars, which it was worth hundreds of millions of dollars, but they had only acquired one arm of it, which was just the Manchester-based agency. But anyway, it was a very complicated acquisition. Mm. So that's why there was kind of a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. Stephen Bartlett came and defended the price and things like that to kind of understand what went on there. But it's, you know, it's good for Brave Bison to realise the, you know, what's the word?
Put it to pay off.
It paid off, exactly. And yeah, it sits alongside their other parts of the business, which focus on commerce and performance.
So the agency also launched a new proposition at the end of last year, moving it to a creator-led model. But what exactly does it mean by that, Lucy?
Yes, so they, to give Social Chain a bit of a refresh, they rebranded it and they gave it a new strategy. And part of this new strategy was focusing on creators. And this is something that we are seeing happen more across other agencies. And, you know, the reason that Brave Bison did it to Social Chain is because they believe that the creative agency model is outdated. And that's why you're seeing the rise of a lot of these social media specialist agencies. And they're doing really well because they can do more for clients than larger creative agencies in some ways, because of the expertise that they have. And social moves at such a pace, focusing on a creative-led strategy means you can be a lot more flexible, a lot more adaptive. You can tap into communities quicker. Mm-hmm. And Brave Bison said that the reason they've done this is because they believe it democratizes creativity by using creators to be creative. You know, and they said if we need to tap into something like a trend or a demographic, I think, you know, for example, they have Holland and Barrett. So if they wanted to tap into one of their audiences within that consumer base, they can use creators to do that. And it's a much quicker and much more effective way of going in. So, yeah, I mean, when you say it like that, it does make a lot of sense, doesn't it?
It sounds, yeah. I can see the benefits from a flexibility point of view. Mm. In, you know, if you're thinking about as well like what Unilever put into its Clean Talk campaign as well, and just being able to tap into that really, really active and passionate group on TikTok. I mean, I even love watching cleaning
videos. Isn't it? Do love that.
I was also really interested to find out more, Lucy, about how the group's headcount increasing by 55%, how much of that was due to the purchase of Social Chain?
It was a stat that I think was worth putting in the story, but it wasn't an overly surprising one. They did acquire an agency that I believe had a headcount of 122. So of course their kind of headcount over the year was going to rise. But the interesting thing, I think it happened around about the summer, is they cut Social Chain's staff by 28%, obviously as part of an efficiency drive. But the reasons they gave for that efficiency drive was 28%, or, you know, a large proportion of that 28%, just weren't really having an impact on the business. And as harsh as that sounds, I think the way they were saying that is because it was owned by a very large German conglomerate. A lot of the people working for Social Chain weren't really well connected with the culture of the business, and therefore the productivity wasn't very high in those parts of the business. So for them, it saved them $1 million.
And Marianne, so you were at the RISE conference last week. How was that?
I was. Yeah, it was great. It's the first kind of external event that I've done for campaign. So it was really good to kind of get to grips with that. And there were lots of diverse speakers from big brands. So we had Diageo there, P&G and Lego, to name a few, as well as kind of agency figures and media leaders as well. So in particular, P&G's global CMO had some really interesting things to say about making ads accessible. So she talked about how P&G was moving to make all of its ads 100% accessible throughout Europe and kind of encouraged delegates to do the same. So to demonstrate this, she showed us an ad, a P&G ad, as it would have been available for somebody with quite a severe sight impediment. Mm-hmm. And then she showed us the same ad with really strong audio descriptions and kind of outlined the differences there in terms of being able to experience what the brand is trying to push, and obviously helping those with, for example, sight impediments being able to actually engage with the ad and, you know, maybe engage with the product and end up kind of purchasing the product. So she talked about how it's also striving to be inclusive by design and mentioned that it's going to be using closed captioning as standard across Europe, and then spoke about some of the ways that other brands and creatives might be able to do that.
I went to a Canon event, which was supported by VML, and it was obviously about photography, but again, it was all about how people with sight impediments view the world, and mm-hmm. a lot of the photographs were tactile, so you could feel them. But they also, so the photographs that they had then like a screen in front, which would be like, oh, this is what this experience would be like if you had glaucoma or something like that. But it was just kind of interesting to see something that's so, you know, like advertising is such a visual industry, but it can still be accessible if brands take upon themselves to kind of show some responsibility.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And just something that the CMO mentioned as well. So she asked all of the delegates to kind of put their hands up if they themselves, or they knew somebody kind of within their family or friendship circle that had issues with either their hearing or their sight. And the majority of people obviously put their hands up. And it was interesting to see that, you know, that's not always kind of the default in terms of advertising, being able to reach as many people as possible, particularly when you're talking mm-hmm. about the products that P&G offer to customers, which are obviously kind of everyday use personal care items. So it makes sense to reach as many people as possible.
They were, P&G were actually, they were brought up as an example of best practice by ISBA in its new, it published a accessibility guide for marketers towards the end of last year. And one of the takeaways of it was to make subtitles the default, mm-hmm. because it's when you're thinking about inclusivity in general, like I've written about it and talked about it in the workplace a lot, but as soon as you make it accessible for all people, it just makes it easy for everybody. Like, you think about how we consume media and like how annoying it is when on Instagram the sound comes on and you don't want it to, but if you just have subtitles there already, it's instantly just a better experience all around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another interesting thing that you wrote about that came from Doc Martin's chief brand officer, which was that marketers or marketing can get in the way of a product. And I think you wrote that he was talking about not just jumping on trends and just kind of putting, if you are making the customer journey to get to the product as short as possible, rather than putting all these things in the way, just people want to get to the product, so give them the product, which I thought was quite an interesting way of talking about trends, because, you know, especially in my past in performance marketing, where I talk about trends a lot, especially on social media, people are always asking, like, how can brands tap into trends? How to do this? How to do that? And how do you do it authentically? But maybe in some cases, if you have a strong enough brand messaging and you have a great product, you don't need trends. In fact, you probably avoid that. Maybe, I don't know, does it kind of like cheapen the product in a way if you start trying to
jump on the bandwagon
and jump on the bandwagon?
Yeah, I think that's kind of tied into a lot of what EJ was saying. So he mentioned that in his previous role at Apple, and obviously with Doc Martens now, where he's going to actually be chief exec from next year, he spoke about kind of letting the product speak for itself and putting the product at the kind of center and the forefront of the ads. And I think with those big brands like Apple and Doc Martens, you're able to kind of let the product kind of do the talking without necessarily having to jump on trends, but I think it absolutely depends on what the product is that you're marketing and whether quote unquote jumping on trends may actually be useful for promoting your product to a certain group of people.
I think it probably depends on the size of the brand as well, because I think jumping on trends can also really work.
Definitely,
Hilton, you know, the hotel chain, they've used TikToks in such an interesting way, and they did that viral 10-minute TikTok, I don't know if you remember that, where they just used loads of different trends, and it worked really well, and it connected the brand with the younger audience. So, you know, it has its pros and cons, doesn't
Definitely.
It?
Definitely, yeah.
And now, to finish off, I'd be just keen to know what campaigns caught your eye from the past week. So, Lucy, what did you see?
Well, my campaign is actually from the last few days, because, you know, finger on the pulse. So, and this is an out-of-home campaign by Waitrose, which is, they had a out-of-home billboard that was put on like a slant, kind of looked like it was falling down. And this was meant to be them saying that, oh, like, our prices are getting low, our prices are falling down, but, you know, the quality is still great, kind of thing. And the way they were demonstrating this was through the billboard falling down. And it got into the press as a bit of a fail as a campaign, because the local council started putting fences around the wall where the billboard was, as a kind of like a safety precaution thing, because they thought it was going to fall down. So I think a lot of people were commenting saying, oh, is this, has the campaign backfired? But I think if it's getting in the news and if people are talking about it, it's done exactly what the campaign intended to do. I mean, my only criticism was, I didn't actually think the out-of-home copy was that great anyway, because it wasn't very clear to me.
Yeah.
That, oh, the prices are falling down, like this billboard.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, great value, low prices.
Yeah.
And the billboard was falling off the wall. But as a PR stunt, I think it's great. And I think there is that question that you can ask of, can things be so bad that they're good? Which I think I've had so many kind of like marketing failure stories where things have gone completely not the way they wanted. They've got in the press for a bad reason. But at the end of the day, have they got more people, more eyeballs on the brand? Yes. So
yeah,
has the campaign worked?
I mean,
I think so.
So Spark Foundry's Marcus Angelides actually commented on LinkedIn about the campaign this morning and said, you know, that is probably the point of it. And he said he gets the feeling that we'll be seeing more planned brand fails in the coming months.
And I think that's a really interesting trend that we are seeing. So there was a Specsavers experience, I suppose, a couple of months ago, maybe. I kind of lose track of the time, where they had a Specsavers delivery van that seemingly had crashed into a bollard, and it got really big pickup in the mainstream press over the weekend, and kind of was able to promote the services of Specsavers eye tests and essentially did what I would assume was aiming to achieve. And I guess that's the same for Waitrose. We've also seen similar things from Direct Line, where they had a giant wedding cake in front of Blenheim Palace. I think it was just this weekend, just gone, with a van crashing into it to promote their car insurance. So I think it's something that we've seen already, and it could well be something that we continue to see over the summer months.
We're seeing it with Hiscox as well, again in insurance, with the insurance angle, and they're doing like a Postascope have been doing the special builds on it, and they're saying it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, special build campaign across the country for out of home, because they're doing like riffs on different ways that small businesses can slip up if they haven't got insurance, and they have, like, again, the, you know, things that spilling out of billboards or like spelling typos in the copy and stuff like that. So yeah, it seems to be a bit of a trend we've got going on.
I think people are really experimenting with billboards, and I think it's quite fun because it's so simple, and I think to me the best advertising is when it is just so simple. It's like the Specsavers campaign I thought was hilarious, because obviously people went to social media and then, you know, took photos doing their iconic quote, should have gone to Specsavers, thinking they were being quite funny and original, but obviously that's exactly what the campaign intended to do. And you were telling me both that the AA also jumped on the same activation. So they then parked one of their AA vans next to the Specsavers van. So it's kind of like jump on the hype. But I mean, yeah, because if someone was walking past, they literally would have thought, oh, this is actually not a piece of marketing. This is an accident.
Yeah. And I think people kind of picking it up and, you know, posting about these kind of things on social media is what a lot of these brands are going for. They're looking to create that fame online and maybe reach a new audience and get that kind of coverage in the mainstream press so that, you know, more people pick up on what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. I think I need to look through the campaign archives as well and just see exactly what was going on with all of the Colin, the caterpillar kind of, I mean, that was all over social media, all of the different copies, wasn't it? And like the actual lawsuit, right? But I think they resolved it in the end. I don't know. Maybe it's still going on. But like,
I'd love to go into law just to be on the lawsuit.
Calling the caterpillar's lawyer.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, there were conspiracies, entirely conspiracies, about potentially Aldi and M&S actually, maybe creating this friction behind the scenes to create more kind of brand fame on socials because of the massive pickup it was getting. So there were kind of rumors about that. But either way, you know, they've promoted their products and they've promoted what each of them stand for. And arguably it's kind of benefited them.
We've asked the question before, haven't we, about calling out rivals, because that's where it works. Because it's fun, it's lighthearted, it's jovial, but I think people go too far and you know, call out competitors and kind of have a feud that's a bit more serious, a bit more kind of like heavy hitting. It doesn't work as a rivalry and it doesn't help promoting each other.
And I think
there's balance.
Yeah, definitely. I think what helps with the discount is how, even, you know, when you're talking about lawsuits potentially, they're keeping things quite lighthearted on socials. And I think that's what people really engage with, is the kind of fun aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, long live the Pepsi Coca-Cola rivalry. Yeah, as I'm concerned. I'd love to see that.
That is funny. Well, Beau, what has your ad that's caught your eye over the last couple of days?
Yes, week? on brand for me. I've got a Major Angle story, and we've got a campaign on an Amazon Alexa. That is the medium, but it's for OVO Energy's Power Nap campaign, which uses National Grid data to help Alexa users switch to greener sources of electricity.
I thought this was a really interesting campaign because, and you know, from the tech angle, if we're really going to get into our specialism today, this is an expansion or a follow-up from the previous campaign.
So Saatchi's was the creative on it and Good Stuff is the media partner, and they'd done a couple of campaigns last year in Out of Home, one on Houston's massive new billboard that was also using National Grid data.
And I thought it was really interesting, using National Grid data to understand when was the grid using more renewable energy. They then would have these ads appear on digital out of home, you know, programmatically, which was a great campaign, really interesting. But, and this is something that I've kind of, you know, spoken about with other people in the industry, it has received some criticism from ad people about, well, why is it in out of home? It's a fantastic campaign that works really well for Alexa. So I think that's a good improvement on the campaign. But does it work in out of home? Because if they are telling consumers that are driving or walking by, oh, now's the best time to put a wash on, now's the best time to use your tumble dryer or something because it's renewable energy, what are they going to do? Go home and then put on their washers, then turn on the telly? It doesn't really make sense to be doing it out of home when you're asking people to use their energy inside the home, is the only criticism. But other than that, I think it's super smart. Love to see more green sources of electricity, please.
Yes, please. Yeah. No, it's really interesting that you mentioned that, Lucy, actually, because when I was speaking to Alice Tendler, who's Director of Marketing and Brand at OVO, that's really where the idea came from. That's what they wanted to bring out in this Alexa campaign, is that to bring it to the point of where people can really make a difference, because their research has also found that more people will make greener energy choices if they know how their own behaviour can make an impact, and they're at the right point. So just as well for people that might not have heard it or might not have Amazon Alexa, I don't have one, but I kind of want one now just to play around with it. They've done it as like a, it's like a mindfulness session, and they've got James Norton to voice it, who's from actor in Happy Valley, Little Women, and the stage adaptation of A Little Life. It's so soothing. Like the radio ad that they have as well has like thunderstorms in the background, and Saatchi's are doing a really great job of like integrating, like, you know, the sound of a washing machine when it slows down and it goes like wee, and it's like part of a mindfulness track, and I'm like, I would listen to this to relax. And like a plug unplugging as well. And it's just so, it's quite ASMR-y, and I love that anyway.
Tapping into a trend there, you know, ASMR. Yeah. Everyone loves that on social. But yeah, I think it's also interesting that they have adapted the campaign. They've probably heard some feedback and they've done it to an Alexa, which is inside the house, which makes so much sense.
And expands it. Marianne, what about you? What caught your eye this week?
So for me, it was an ad from Tales.com by The Ore. So it's called Never Average. And it's essentially a pack of Labradors running through a field and encountering giant dog toys along the way. And then it ends with one dog approaching a bowl of Tales.com food that kind of magically appears from the grass. And it's essentially designed to promote that each dog is unique and Tales.com's food is tailored to each dog's wants and needs and, you know, medical issues or what have you. And for me, anything with lots of dogs in it is great. It's nice to see the kind of wealth of Labradors in there, given that there was only one in the Andrex ad, which I did appreciate that there was still one, but the more the merrier for me. And I think it's it does a good job of also promoting what the product is designed to showcase in terms of having that individuality for each dog. Given that we've been discussing whether the dogs are AI created or whether they are all real or not, and they all do look slightly individual, so but that's another topic, I think.
I was getting in contact with my contacts at tales.com, and I'm yet to hear back, so if anyone knows, if they are,
breaking news when we find out,
if anyone knows if they are all real dogs, please let us know. But I mean, they know exactly what they're doing, don't they? Just put a ton of dogs on an advert running across a field. I mean, we're talking about it, aren't we?
Yes, it works. It works.
There we go. On that joyful image, I think that's where we'll finish up today. Thank you so much, both of you. If you'd like to learn more about what we've been discussing today, please visit our website, campaignlive.co.uk. Details of our subscriptions are available at campaignlive.co.uk/membership. If you enjoyed this episode of the Campaign Podcast, please follow us, like us, and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. A big thank you to Haymarket podcast producer Till Owen, and also to you for listening. I hope you will join us next time. On behalf of the campaign team, goodbye.